Those contacts continued for many years and are also still going on, and a whole philosophy of life, and being an Earthman's relationship to the greater plan was imparted, and in 1973 Duvaas published this information in a 214-page book titled The Golden Reed. About the time I received that book, I received a registered letter from Argentina, from an old friend, Senor Pedro Romaniuk of Argentina, who had seen something concerning my activities with the Swiss case, and wrote to tell me that he had been in contact with ET beings who told him their home was in what we call Alcyone in the Pleiades. I received scores of letters from sincere people who claimed they had observed UFO craft that were very similar to or even identical with some of the spacecraft pictured in the preliminary report. All of the UFO clubs were receiving these too, which infuriated them to the extent that none of them ever told me what they were receiving. I had to get my information from those who were put down by the clubs for even reporting. Having examined all of this from a knowledgeable point of view, we can draw some comparisons that seem to be of interest. 1. All of those mentioned here who claimed they came from what we call the Pleiades looked as much human as we, and were all about our size in stature and build. 2. All of them articulated the language of their contactee, speaking fluently on our sciences, history and culture. 3. They all said that Earth humanity was descended from their own ancient ancestors, from whom we had inherited our unusual aggressiveness. 4. All of them said their ancestors had been here many times before over the ages, coming and going as conditions changed. 5. They all claimed that they participated in some of the great events in our religious works and our mythologies, sometimes being adored and worshipped as gods, which they said they were not. 6. They all claimed extensive lifespans at least 10 times what is normal for us now. 7. They all, without exception, deplore our misuse of our sciences today, saying that our mind has outrun our spiritual development, and that we have already prepared the end of our planet and our own species, as we know it, and that we have done this before, over and over, and still have not learned this important lesson. For this we are a valuable laboratory study and many ETs from far and wide come here to observe. 8. They all travel faster than the speed of light as we know it in their interstellar trips. 9. There was no conclusive evidence that any of groups mentioned were in direct contact with any of the other Pleiadian groups mentioned. 10. They all mentioned other inhabited planets in what we call the Pleiades. 11. They all mentioned other extraterrestrial beings from elsewhere in the universe coming here to study and observe Earth. 3 mentioned actual contact and willing cooperation with other ETs of other race types and systems. 3 of them used robotoid, part mechanical and part organic, created beings in limited operational functions. 12. They all used organic computers that could be controlled telepathically. 13. They all foresaw great changes in our planet in the near future. 14. None of them had money as we know it, religion or a competitive political system. 15. 3 of them had active bases operating on the surface of our planet. 16. They all were capable of under-ocean operations and used our oceans to great advantage. 17. They all used a variety of different spacecraft in their operations, and they all had distinctive styles of ships and equipment, yet there were many similarities in many respects. 18. 3 groups, that we know of, used very large carrier-type mother ships in deep space near out system while they were here. 19. In each case, to the group of individuals who formed around the contactee, the new contacts and information was so mind-boggling and so profound, and so far exceeded their knowledge of what was going on elsewhere in this world, that they carefully guarded their secret within their own immediate circle for a number of years, and then only confided it to very trusted friends. 20. Up to 1979, none of these groups had ever heard of each other, and there was no cross-correspondence. To illustrate these similarities, we shall look at a couple of these other cases in greater detail. We will review 2 cases that preceded the Swiss case and 1 that was contemporary with it. We know of no new Palladian contacts since the Mir case in Switzerland. Ocaya, Peru. On Tuesday morning, the 14th of January 1975, Charles A. Silva, having rested well from his grueling trip up here from Lima, was up early and checked his watch. It was 6:30 a.m., and it was raining heavily, but he went on down to the bathhouse anyway as he was dying to get back in the carbonated water of the mineral bath once more. It felt so good that he stayed an hour relaxing and just thinking. A short time later, as he was having breakfast in the tiny lunchroom along the road there, he noticed a pickup truck stop and let someone off. It was Ramatis, the ET woman from the Pleiades he had met back in July of 1974 when this all had begun for him. Rama was already aware of his return to the area and had hitchhiked a ride to the lunchroom to meet him. These contacts had already been going on for just about 6 months. He had by this time become convinced, after many demonstrations and revelations, that she was exactly what she said. He was beside himself with excitement and all ears as she told him that not far down the road from here was a ship waiting for them, and today was going to be his first ride in a spaceship. He couldn't believe his ears. He paid his bill and they went out and got in his Volkswagen and drove for about 15 minutes in the directions the woman pointed out. They were moving towards Huancayo when they came to a clearing, where Rama asked him to pull off the road. He did and stopped the car there. Rama took him by the arm and led the way. By then the rain had let up considerably. As they walked, Chico saw something that resembled a small rainbow, very weak in intensity. Rama told him that what he was seeing was an electromagnetic field that surrounds the spacecraft completely, thus making it invisible from all sides, while standing on the ground. They were no more than 25 feet from the ship, and his eyes had not seen it. After they crossed the electrical field barrier, the ship came into full view. This was not like the Vimanas he had seen previously, as it was much larger, but of the same form and shape. Now that he was closer, he could see that it was definitely metallic, with a silverish glow around it. Seen from that angle, it had a shape similar to a football, American style. The ship was resting on three metallic legs. Rama asked him to take off his shoes, and he wondered if Moses did the same on top of Mount Sinai so many long years ago. Rama had told him about some Exodus events. She said his shoes were wet from the rain, and water being a conductor of electricity, she didn't want him to get a shock. They were both given footwear similar to sandals made out of heavy wood, and they climbed up the metal ladder that descended from a circular door. As Chico entered, he experienced a sudden change of temperature, and noticed that it was a bit colder than the already cold Andes mountains. It was the same kind of feeling one gets upon entering an air-conditioned building from the heat outside, but this was stranger. Two crew members about 4.5 to 5 feet tall greeted them in silence. They were wearing one-piece suits of a shining gray color. It covered them from head to toe. There was no doubt they were humanoids, and he didn't remember ever having seen anything like this on Earth before. He had a creepy feeling, though they were very peaceful in demeanor. He felt safe with them, but still a lingering fear of the unknown existed and held him back a little. That didn't last long, for as soon as he took two more steps, he came face to face with their crew leader standing inside an oval room about 25 feet in length, 15 to 20 across, and about 7 high. The illumination came from all over the room, with a touch of an orange, almost a red glow. He had a nice face, benevolent attitude, long nose, and slanted eyes not like Rama's, not Oriental either. When he looked at Chico, it was plain that he had no eyelashes and he didn't blink, but there was definitely eye activity. It took him a little while to put his finger on what it was that made those eyes alive. It was the pupils that narrowed and widened as he communicated with them. After he got up from a triangular chair directly in front of some control panels, he walked forward to receive them. Rama and the crew leader exchanged glances. It seemed as though they had planned this visit. Then he looked at Chico, who instinctively walked with him toward the control panel. The ET's mouth did not move, but Chico could hear muffled words and sentences. And it sounded as though he had a heavy accent. He seemed to sense that Chico had difficulty understanding him. Suddenly he could hear him inside his head perfectly, in the same way that he and Rama had conducted their mind-to-mind chats. The ET showed Chico around the craft. The instrument panels looked like the kind of consoles one would find in a computer operating room. There were portholes all around the craft, and his host told him that they were in an observation ship with a crew of four. Up to this time he had seen only two. The ET flipped a switch and a screen-like device lit up, and they were able to see the outside of the spaceship where the other two crew members were. "Where do you come from?" Chico asked. "We are from a system not too far from here." The ET opened a scroll and Chico could see an oval map with many kinds of dots on it. He pointed to a group of stars and said, pointing, that this was the constellation of Daro, star Alcyone, the Pleiades. And he pointed to our Sunday. He showed Chico his home planet on a map, but to him it just looked like a bunch of dots. The ET said they had bases on Mars and Venus, and Chico answered, "What about Earth?" "Not our bases, but bases that all of us are cooperatively keeping here on Earth. It is our mission as peaceful intelligences to maintain the balance of the universe. With our terrestrial bases we keep an eye on you. In a few minutes we are going to see one of the bases here in South America, but first you must tell Rama where you want your car." He turned to Rama, who was carefully observing his reactions, and told her that he was supposed to go to the city called Trujillo and to another called Chiclayo, both located on the northern coast of Peru, 500 miles to the north of Lima. Somehow they had hooked his Volkswagen up under the ship, and he could see it on the screen. The thought hit him, what would the car rental agency think if they knew that one of their cars made it to Chiclayo in about 9 minutes from where they had been before? About 800 miles as the crow flies. Now that the car was attached, and they were ready to depart, Rama exchanged some information with the crew leader, and Chico was placed between him and Rama, and she went on to explain, "This machine is operated through reversible electromagnetism. See those columns going to the rotor that looks like transparent plastic?" "Yes. Well, those are reactors. When the mercury in that rotor gets going full speed we can reverse the magnetic and electrical energy. That way we can control matter and also overcome the forces of gravity." When they took off, Chico said, he felt a very great force, and Rama told him not to worry. They stopped and hovered for a while over an old road that led to the Pan American Highway near a little town not far from the city of Chiclayo. There they unloaded the Volkswagen, though they did not get out of the ship. Rama said they would leave it there for an hour or two. Later she and Chico would come back in a Vimana, which is a small craft for two or three people. They ascended again, but at a lesser speed, flying on over the Andes Mountains again at a great altitude. He could see some commercial jetliners far below them, a tiny specks of light when they reflected the sun descending gradually. At a distance he could see a big body of water. Rama said it was Lake Titicaca and that they were going down into it. Chico opened his eye wide as he saw the lake approaching, expecting crash or at least a marked change going from one densit to another, but it was smooth and there was nothing resembling a crash when they hit the water. Then there was another change in density, and suddenly they were up in the air flying through the clouds. He saw some ice-covered mountains in the distance and recognized them as the ice peaks 25 miles from Huanchio. He could see the Mantaro Valley with its river running in the center of it, and the scenery all around. They landed the ship somewhere close to the ice peaks, where Rama's Vimana was waiting for them. Chico then thanked the crew leader for the tour, and that one said they would see each other again in a few days. Rama flew the Vimana to Chiclayo, where it was left in hiding behind some sand hills, and they walked to where the car was left earlier. Chico had actually flown in two different kinds of UFOs, and he considered the experience of a lifetime. As they walked to the car, Rama repeated her earlier suggestion that Chico write all this down for later. Now she added, the purpose of writing this down is not for the reporting of UFOs. From now on, you and I, and my friends from other worlds, are going to see a lot of each other. You will be getting in and out of spacecraft, you'll see motherships and more of our surface bases. Don't bother writing about that, because much of that has been written already. Besides, you, yourself, said that nobody would believe it anyway. That's right. What I'd like you to do is to write about our conversations, and hope that those few who choose to believe you do so out of conviction, after they have corroborated it with the reading suggestions we are going to give. Also choose to accept that some people, human beings from other planets, are already here. That is the purpose of the message. This race type mentioned here is only one of several working in complete harmony with the humans from the Pleiades, who true to their word continued to return. In our preliminary report of investigation we have mentioned the stone records of another generation of human visitors who came and went several times in the many thousand year history of that civilization in what is now the Occucage Desert near Ica, Peru, south of Lima. Those records have been expanded now by Dr. J.V. Carbura and their narrative fills many hundreds of pages. But that was not the only Pleiadian contact developing on the South American continent in these days. There was another that had reached the face-to-face contact stage only a little over 6 months before that. This began in mid-continent, but also ranged over a bigger area. Again, there were a number of people involved, as in Switzerland, Bogota, Colombia, only 8 months before the Akaya contacts began secretly within a very small closed group there. A similar program of contacts began near Bogota, Colombia. The Bogota contacts came to light outside the local group there in Colombia a little over a year after the Mir contacts in Switzerland had begun in January of 1975, and the parties to the Colombian case knew nothing of Mir, and the Swiss group had never heard of the activities halfway around the world in Colombia. They might as well have been living on two different worlds. Nothing at the time had been released on the Akaya contacts until late in 1975, after the witness had been aboard the spacecraft several times, and had come to accept this new reality himself, and then he confided the phenomenal information only to a very few trusted confidants. The UFO cosmonauts contacting the Colombians told that group that they came from what we call the Pleiades. To those there involved, these new contacts were so mind-boggling and so profound, and so far exceeded their internal knowledge of what was going on elsewhere in the world, that they carefully guarded their secret within their own immediate circle for 3 years, and then only confided it to very trusted friends in UFO research also. None of them or their friends had ever heard of Eduard Mir. Those in Switzerland, on the other hand, now conducted themselves in a similar fashion. Stranger still, the Pleiadians, in neither case, made any mention of contacts with the other groups of terrestrials, and they even used different styles of equipment and spacecraft, although at the same time, there were similarities in some respects. Both groups used a variety of spacecraft for different functions. Both the Swiss and the Colombian contactors employed part organic, part mechanical creatures in labor operations aboard the spacecraft, and both used a large mothership in space as an operating base. Both had similar technological wonders aboard the spacecraft that came to the surface of our planet, and in both cases the environment aboard the mothership was 99% recyclable and almost perfectly efficient, and the occupants lived long lives by out standards. In both cases the cosmonauts seem to be fully aware of the ancient history of our Earth. The Colombian story is briefly as follows. Engineer, D. Enrique Castillo Rincon, president of the Instituto Colombiano de Investigaciones de Fenómenos Extraterrestres, conferee and delegate to the Unidentified Flying Objects Investigative Organization, and president of Colombia with home and offices in Bogotá, got off the bus more than 150 kilometers from the capital. It was about 20:00 in the evening of Saturday, the 3rd of November 1973. This was near the appointed place. He had been told to carry nothing that could cause harm or damage to anyone or anything. He had arrived a little in advance of the appointed time because he had to walk a ways around a small lake, and he didn't want to be late. He was wearing a rana, a kind of poncho, and a sombrero. He arrived at the site that had been designated before this appointed time. He had been given his instructions in a communication prior to embarking on this trip. When he arrived near the lake, everything was familiar to him, as if he had been there before, as if he were now reliving something he had already done before, and he could see the place that would be marked by the metal sphere placed there to guide him. He thought, "Good, this is the place. I arrived with great anticipation," Enrique recalled, and walking too close to the lake stepped in water up to my knees. It was very cold. In Bogota, study group was meditating at this very moment. They were praying that all would work out well in my anticipated meeting with the spacecraft. There were more than 30 others in this study group in Bogota who had developed a voice channel contact some time before with a communicator who said he was a visitor from another planet to Earth. A number of voice channel recordings were made and many questions were asked and answered. In response to a request for a more direct face-to-face meeting, the group was invited to choose one member from among them to represent them in such a meeting. They had chosen Rincon, leaving their channel with the group in meditation in Bogota. So I forged ahead. I came to the small metal sphere in the exact site described. I remembered having seen in my preview of this scene, a woman with a child in her arms and a burro carrying some wood, and two dogs, and another child walking along beside. So I waited. Sure enough, they were there too. They looked at me a little strangely but continued walking, and I continued walking normally also. I arrived at the point where I could see two clumps of trees exactly as I had seen in the preview some time before. I did not know which was the intended one, so I picked up the sphere and went into the nearest haunt. Thinking, since I had the sphere they would know where I went. The sphere became activated and began to heat up. It was about the size of a golf ball and was full of small holes. As soon as I took it into my hands it began to heat up and small rays of light shot out of the holes. It got so hot that I had to hold it with the point of my poncho to carry it. I had the impression that it was something like a compass, but it did not have any needle, or anything else. It was a metallic sphere of some material like stainless steel. I went into the clump of trees, remembering mentally that over there was where I had seen a clearing. I reached it about 2010, some 10 minutes late. I was worried about this. I still had the sphere in my hands and I looked around me but didn't say anything unusual. I looked up and saw only branches and leaves. Then I heard something like a distant boat motor which was lost in the distance. I waited in the woods as the minutes passed terribly slow. I looked at my watch and it was now 2015. I thought, "Dear God, what is going to happen? Protect me in any case." I began to feel fear. It gave me a sincere fright. There I was, representing all the people who were praying for me, and thinking of backing out. I decided I will not give up. At 2025 I began to hear a tremendous noise. I was in the woods and could not tell where it was coming from. Suddenly the whole area was illuminated brilliantly. Two huge craft approached and passed directly over me. They came streaming water as if they had come from the bottom of the lake. Water cascaded from the sides like from a submarine when it surfaces. I waited breathless as I watched. They flew over me and the whole area warmed up from the heat. They must have put out a tremendous amount of energy. These craft were flattened disc forms, and underneath I could see something that rotated, and below that, saw three large white round parts that turned slowly, a colored light came out. These gigantic objects, such tremendous spectacle, gave me new cause for alarm. And then it fell silent. I could only hear a very low sound dying down. They hung there, in the sky, about 100 meters between the two as best I could calculate. These objects were shaped like huge soup plates joined at the rims. They were about 45 meters in diameter and about 12 from top to bottom. I could see the cupola on top very clearly. The light slowly dimmed down, leaving only a small bright light source illuminated. It lighted only the area directly under the craft. Then one of the ships began to approach. The other remained quietly in place. It gave me new fright to see this tremendous monster so close. And then it stopped, suspended above the small stream there, and two lateral beams of light came on. These new beams shined down and I saw two beings descending in them as in an elevator. In their descent they disappeared behind the trees from my position, and I couldn't see them land. Then I heard their steps as they approached. At this moment all of the lights on the spacecraft went out and they remained completely silent. After seeing the tremendous luminosity, bright as day, I couldn't see anything when the light went out, and then I heard the steps of the beings, and then I saw them at about 10 meters away. They approached separated one from the other. They wore helmets and suits that seemed very fitted, and I could see them clearly as they neared me. Then I heard the first telepathic communication, "Brother, we are here. Do not fear. We are your friends." I tried to coordinate my ideas and thought, "Yes, why not? I'm not afraid." Then I heard the voice say, "I'm your friend, Enrique, do not be afraid." I shook my head. I could see that they were tall, more than 1.70 meters in stature. When they came up to within 2 meters of me, he said, "I'm your friend. Do not be afraid." I said, "Yes," and the other said, "If you are not ready, we can suspend this until another day. If you are not afraid, we can continue this contact and we may ascend aboard." I said I was ready and took a step forward so that they could see that I had lost my fear. They noticed that I was still a little wary, and one of them took me by the hand and the other by my shoulder and said, "Walk with us up to the light." We went a few meters forward and one of them said, "Straight ahead. You feel a little worry in your head and in your body, but nothing is going to happen to you." The other said, "Brother Enrique, we guarantee it. We do not want to cause you any harm. Moreover, if you are still afraid, you may return and we will prepare this for another day." I could not see their faces for the helmets. I asked if the helmets had visors, and a form of visor raised a little in front of one, showing the nose and mouth but partly covering the mouth, which had a rectangular shape. I could not see the Mameluco space suit well because of the dark, and I could not see up to now exactly what color they were. Then they stopped me and said they could sense a little worry. At that moment the spacecraft came forward and flashed a ray of light. I felt tremendous thrills and some twitching in all the skin of my head, like needle picking me. I stood erect and began to ascend. When I saw that I was leaving the trees below, I thought, "What if I should fall?" I continued to ascend like in an elevator. I was surrounded by a yellowish light. It gave me the impression of being solid. I tried to touch it with my hands and it felt solid like crystal. It must have been only energy, because I did not see crystal, I didn't see anything, but when I touched the light it felt solid. I felt a thump and then a port began to open, and there it was fully open and I was inside and it closed. A moment later the other two entered, removed their helmet and smiled. They had taken their helmets off so I could see their faces. They asked me for the sphere, which I gave them, and then they said, "Wait here. Take off your clothes." And I took everything off. They opened an automatic port and we entered. Then they opened a side port, like a window, and looked at me smiling. I heard a voice say, "Do not be afraid, we are going to enter a little smoke, but this is necessary. Do not be afraid." In spite of their assurances, I associated this immediately with the Nazi gassing of the Jews. I did not see where the smoke came from, but it came in and it smelled like lemon. It only lasted a minute and was then drawn out through some rectangular openings in the wall and disappeared. Then I noticed that there was no shadow from my body anywhere and I thought, "Where is the light coming from?" I could not see any lamps. Then they gave me my clothes, which I put on, leaving the Rana and Sombrero aside. They opened a door and said, "Now you may proceed." They explained that the process was simply to disinfect everything from whatever microbes we may have brought from the Earth's surface. I went into the first compartment that they opened, and there were four persons seated there waiting for me. I came to the first one and he said, "Enrique, how are you?" and gave me his hand. He gave me his hand like we shake hands and said, "How are you, brother?" "I am going to shake your hand," said another. This, indicating the first, is the commander. He said his name was what sounded like Ramesh. I gave him my hand and he gave me some thumps on it. The rest greeted me this way also. The only one who did not give me his hand was the first who had said, "Brother Enrique." He now turned to me and said, "I am Cyril." I said, "How are you, Cyril?" And he said, "Cyril, Cyril Weiss, remember in 1969 in Caracas, Venezuela, at the entrance to the theater, when we met?" And I said, "Cyril Weiss. But you are a little changed. And what are you doing here?" And he said, "I am one of the crew of this ship." I was terribly surprised.